Hello and welcome to another Marketing Meetup podcast. My name is James and I'm really glad that you're here. Today we've got an incredible guest, somebody that made me smile and laugh right from the beginning. He's a guy called James Peach and he's the former brand director of Vinted over their huge period of growth. He also has held prominent positions in marketing at Google, Uber and Innocent. Now, if that wasn't enough for a marketing podcast, he's also an incredible human that's gone and clocked 41,000 kilometres on a bike across 38 countries. He's hiked across Argentina and Norway, kayaked the width and climbed the height of the UK non-stop. And he's been awarded as a fellow of the Royal Geographical Society and has a bunch more adventures planned, which you'll hear about later on in the interview. James regularly is described using words like the most informative, thought-provoking and entertaining speaker we've ever had. And he's a really nice chap as well. And so I think you're really going to enjoy this. Today is split into a presentation at the beginning and then there's some Q&A at the end. And I think it's one of those episodes that's just, it filled my cup up for the day. And I think you're going to really enjoy it. Now, before I hand over to the recording, I wanted to just take a minute to thank Exclaimer, who are our featured sponsor. Exclaimer are an email signature system that enables you to manage email signatures across your organization. So you make one change and it's changed for everybody. And it's also used as like an appetizing channel for things that you want to promote. It's a really clever little bit of tech that until you realize it's there, you didn't realize that you missed it kind of thing. So highly recommend it and would love it if you find email signatures a pain, then this is going to solve that problem for sure. So yeah, without further ado, I'm going to pass over. But thanks for signing in and listening. And yeah, we'll see you on the next one.
Hello, everyone. Pleasure to be speaking to you all this morning. I hope you're enjoying some better weather after the grueling experience we've had over the last few days. And the sun is out wherever you are, and all is well wherever you are calling in from. This is the first time I've been on Marketing Meetup, and over the last couple of weeks, meeting James, meeting Joe, it's been a wonderful experience. It's clearly this awesome, positive, friendly, engaged community. And so it's an absolute privilege to be chatting to you this morning. So what we're going to be talking about for the next sort of 30 odd minutes is lessons in being your best self. Ultimately, I've got tons of bits of content and loads of things that I thought we could talk about today, but I've had to sort of cherry pick bits of bobs which I thought would be relevant and useful to the audience of the Marketing Meetup. So it's sort of divided into being your best self as a marketeer. And I've got three things that I've been considering over the last few months, three things that I think are really useful and important to remember about your approach as a marketeer. And I've got three things that I think are really useful and important about your approach to operating in a corporate environment and bringing your best self to your work. So yourself as a marketeer and yourself, I suppose, as an employee or someone trying to drive and build a business. That's what we're going to be going through over the next 30 odd minutes. Do fire any questions in the chat. It'd be great to answer them. Otherwise, in the meantime, let's crack on. Before we get into this, it's pretty important to ask who the crap is he? Who is this strange person talking to me at 9:30 on a Tuesday morning? Well, my name is James Peach, as James has said. I'm born in Leicester. I'm half Australian, now live in Northeast London. My career started many moons ago, actually, in startups. I left university and went straight into the startup world. And there's a very depressing correlation between me leaving a startup and its immediate success. But that's something that I have to deal with as I've gone through my career. And from the startups, I then joined a small smoothie company in West London, operating out of a shed in West London, where there were only a couple of hundred of us trying to make this smoothie company work. From that tiny little juice company in West London, Innocent is now the biggest juice manufacturer across Europe and even operates in parts of Southeast Asia. I joined Innocent in a commercial capacity, then moving into the marketing team and leading as a senior brand manager in the brand team there at Innocent. Coca-Cola bought Innocent ultimately, and I got a real taste for evil American conglomerates, and so moved to another one. And joined Uber as a senior campaign manager, but ultimately left as head of brand for Northern Europe. I was at Uber for just under 4 years during some pretty challenging times. Ultimately, the team I was running and part of were looking after the reputation metrics. It's not easy to look after reputation metrics when you're kicked out of your most profitable city twice, when we declined an operational license in London. We had problems with the CEO being caught in a brothel in South Korea. We have problems with ultimately part of the corporate Me Too movement came from the Susan Fowler blog, the way she was treated while she was working in San Francisco. It was a real a whirlwind experience of reputational challenges, but also an incredible 4 years. And then more recently, and more relaxing, and certainly more positively, I've been senior director of global brand at Vinted, leading a team of 120, growing that team and growing that business from 4 markets where it was when they first gave me a call to now 19 markets across Europe and North America. When I got a call from the VP of marketing at Vinted about the job, I'd never heard of it. And now it's all I hear about. I know for sure I get reminded about Vinted every morning when more packages arrive on my doorstep that my girlfriend has ordered. So yeah, that's sort of my career in a bit of a nutshell. And as James mentioned, there's a couple other bits going on. I'm also a fellow of the Royal Geographic Society. So I do some work with the team over in South Kensington. And also I'm a non-celebrity ambassador for the Campaign Against Living Miserably Calm, which is an incredible charity. The charity is focused on reducing the suicide rate amongst young people. Suicide is still the biggest killer of 15 to 39 year olds in the UK, and that simply has to stop. It's a wicked charity. It's also an incredible brand, and I'm very proud to be a part of that journey. And then, yeah, I've got this sort of weird second career where on the left-hand side there, I organised the first triathlon of the UK, where we cycled the length, climbed the height, and kayaked the width non-stop. I've trekked across Norway, trekked across Argentina. In the sort of middle left there is me hiking a lap of Tenerife during lockdown, where I got desperately sunburnt. Very strange thing to do, but loved it. And on the right-hand side, there is something I haven't done, but something I'm planning, which is to hike across Central America in January next year. And apart from those things, I suppose the biggest adventure I've taken on is that I spent just under 2 years cycling around the planet on a bicycle, starting in the middle there at my mum's house in the UK, going across North America, down South America, up Australia, then all the way home from Southeast Asia, through Central Asia, the Middle East, Europe, and all the way back home, back to my mum's house. It was a long old journey. It's a big sort of part of my life. Like it's a very sort of fundamental experience of which lots of what I do now, what I talk about, and the things I do are ultimately based on. 41,000 kilometers, 38 countries, totally unsupported, sleeping wherever there was somewhere to sleep, under bridges, homeless shelters, prison cells, bushes, dry riverbeds, people's gardens, wherever there was a place that was quiet, not too many bugs, and where I could get a bit of sleep. And ultimately, since returning from this adventure and since leaving Vinted a couple of months ago, I've started doing some speaking, a bit like this. Firstly, on the topic of what does it take personally to be part of these fast-growing businesses like Vinted and Uber, like what is the impact on you as a human, and what are some of the things you need, I suppose, ultimately in terms of resilience to keep going and to survive that sort of corporate environment and the fast pace that it has. And then I've also done some writing about cycling around the world and what does it take to cycle around the world? Like, how do you get through the ups and the downs? Like, what are the personal things you need to think about, and what helps you get through? And in writing about both those things, unsurprisingly, they're both the same. What is required as a human to get through cycling around the world or growing businesses are really very similar skills, very similar outcomes. And that's what I've learned over the last 2 months in writing these things. And so now I do quite a lot of talking on resilience, on mental health and wellness, on high performing teams, and on other topics around leadership, etc. And that's more of what I'm doing right at the moment. So that's me, a really long intro, sorry, but I hope it's interesting to understand both one side of what I'm up to and the other. Today, we're going to be chatting about lessons in being your best self, whether that's in marketing or that's adventure. We're going to kick off with the marketing side. Ultimately, this is about how we approach work, whether we approach it under our title of marketeers as our role or, and how we approach it as ourselves. So these are the three things I wanted to mention in how I think it's important to approach marketing. It's about mattering, it's about being clear enough, and it's about I-hearting strategy. Those are the three topics we'll chat through now. The first thing is about mattering. This comes from a quote I heard many years ago, which I absolutely wish I was my own. You know, when you hear a quote so many times, I've started to think maybe I came up with it. I definitely didn't come up with it, but God, I wish I had. And that is the idea that marketing is not about marketing to consumers. It's about mattering to people. Ultimately, this is really a fight against, I suppose, some of the language we use as marketeers. But a lot of that language, especially in these big companies that I've worked for, sort of starts to put consumers as their own thing. Like it creates like a gap between the two of you. We're marketing to consumers, consumers being this other thing, this other entity, these aliens, these other things. Well, the truth is, consumers are people. They're you, they're me. And we're trying to influence how they make decisions and how they behave. That's simple as that. And in order to influence how a human behaves, we simply need to matter to them. We need to be in their lives and we just need to matter. And it's difficult to matter sometimes. It's difficult to be important and to ultimately influence how people behave. But the more we can think about, get out of this world of marketing language and thinking of consumers as this other entity and actually just think, how do we just matter to people? How do we make our brand, our business, just matter a bit more? And mattering, I think, ultimately came from Simon Sinek. We've all seen The Golden Circle. If you haven't seen The Golden Circle, jump onto YouTube and spend 15 minutes there. The Golden Circle being about the why, how companies find their why. Every company knows what they do, what they make, what it is. Most companies know how they do it, whether it's cheaper or faster or better quality. But understanding why you do it is that really important, soulful bit which really helps you connect with consumers and also helps you connect with the workforce that are running out for you every day. When I talk about mattering to people, I think a lot of people think, oh, that you're talking about the why. You're not really. There's loads of ways you can matter to people. You can be the cheapest. You can have a really functional benefit to matter to people. But if you are able to approach that why, really get under the skin of why you operate and why you're important in someone's life, you definitely have a deeper connection and therefore able to matter more. Here's an example of what I mean by this. I think this is really fundamental data, which I really jump on as a brand leader at any company I've ever worked for. What this data looks at is the likelihood of someone to switch to a competitor if the price got a bit cheaper. So if you take price, which is always the fundamental, one of the fundamental levers of any business, of any brand, if you take that out completely and just operate on how much the company matters to people, this is what you see. So in the example here, the first bit of data there, the 78, that's saying that 78% of this company's consumers would move if a competitor had a cheaper price. What that tells me is this company doesn't matter to that person. Beyond price, there's nothing about this company that matters. And you can see the different scores there. But what ultimately this is telling you, we don't matter enough to our consumers. So as if price became not the winning hook that we have, then we are at huge risk of losing a large portion of consumers. Which ultimately then leads me to sit here and massage my ego and interest to walk you through some companies that do matter to me and why they do. So if Heinz tomato ketchup put their price up, I'm still buying Heinz because the heritage it has in my life. I had it as a kid. I love the taste. I cannot move. If the shop doesn't sell it, I'll go find it in another shop. Like, I'm not moving because that brand, that product matters to me. BBC, the quality of the BBC, the quality of the podcast that I listen to, I love them. Whatever happens there, that is a company that has a deep-rooted mattering to me. I'm sure you all know this brand. It's very famous worldwide. It's Loughton Self-Dry Car and Van Hire. not far from me. If I want to go to my mum's house, this is how I get there. Very well priced. But ultimately, Tina and Steve on the front desk are two of the most wonderful people in the world. And I'm aware this is a very niche example, but it really, really matters to me. I will use them over anyone else, even if their price goes up, because they're such wonderful people, such wonderful service, and I've got a relationship with them. I hate lugging massive amounts of toilet roll back from Sainsbury's. Absolutely hate it. So the convenience that Who Gives a Crap gives my life means that they are a brand that have mattered to me. And lastly, and more deeply than most, and more importantly, is those brands that have a really strong sense of purpose. I eat Tony's Chocolonely chocolate because their purpose matters to me. REI, when I used to work in San Francisco a lot, I would always be in REI. It's an outdoor sports shop. They have a really, really strong sense of purpose. And what they do there really, really connects with me and matters to me. REI's whole thing is about opting outside. And when they were planning a marketing campaign for Black Friday, their busiest day of the year, they thought, what should we do? Like, what's the right thing for us to do on Black Friday? And they realized and they looked at their purpose and they thought, our whole purpose is about opting outside. Why on the busiest shopping day should we be facilitating that? And so they closed their doors. They closed the front doors and said, no, we're closed today. Get outside. They paid all their staff a full day's wage and said, get outside. And that's a company really like living its purpose and bringing its purpose to life in every way they act. And that means that they really, really matter to me as someone who loves being outside myself. Mattering. Mattering in the dictionary means being important or significant. How is your business, your brand, important or significant in people's lives? How is it useful? How is it interesting? What is it bringing with it that means it matters? There we are, one down, mattering to people. The second thing about your approach to marketeer is clear enough. This is something I really, really think is something that is missing from the marketing world so often. And I've got to say this, once I've explained this to you, you're going to see it everywhere. So I'd like to apologize off the bat. Stories are pointless if no one can understand them. You must always prioritize clarity. Marketeers are just storytellers. We're just paid storytellers, ultimately. That's what we're doing. We're telling stories all the time. But what you find in the world is that people's ego can get in front of their capacity to tell a story. And that's ultimately, clarity will always be more important than being clever. And you find that a lot of marketeers and a lot of creative overemphasize the clever in deficit of the clear. And ultimately, that means a campaign won't survive or won't perform to what it's set out to try and achieve. I am a massive example of this. Here's some work I did at Uber. This work, I think, is just covered in ego. Why is it covered in ego? Well, the first thing is we've tried to be really, really clever here. Off the bat, if you're looking at things that you need as you're driving past this on a motorway, bearing in mind the average out of home, you get 0.03 or 0.06 seconds to take it all in. The first thing you notice when you drive past this is that there's nothing on there suggests this is a taxi company. This is a taxi company. Uber is a taxi company. There's nothing on here to tell you that. This is quite early stage Uber, where we're really trying to build that awareness in the UK. So that's the first thing wrong with it. The second thing is that you've got to take in the idea of going from A to B. And that concept, very quickly, you've only got 0.03 seconds to do this. You've got to take in that A to B is a thing. And this person is going from A to B. They're going from a flower shop to a restaurant. And the way they're doing it is effortlessly. There's so much in here, so much detail, so much conceptual things to understand. And the 0.03 seconds, you could do with 30, maybe 40 seconds to take this in and really give it the thought to really actually understand it. What we've done here is prioritized being clever, to some extent prioritized our own egos instead of actually making a clear piece of advertising. This was, when I was there, and probably still is to this day, the highest performing advert at Uber. It's just a simple digital advert. Unfortunately, I can't show the motion, but ultimately someone clicks the app and one of those cars turns towards the person who has clicked the app. It shows the magic of Uber, which it's been around for so long now, you've probably forgotten, but you used to have to queue up outside a place with a yellow light or call them on your phone. But now there's this beautiful thing where you can tap your phone and the real world changes and a human being drives their car towards you. It's the simplest thing in the world, but it's clear. It's clear. It's not clever, and it works every time. This is a terrible screen grab, but this is my first ever advert I ever made at Innocent for the Big Knit. The Big Knit's a charity campaign where we knit little woolly hats to put them on bottles. I was in charge of this advert. There's a little granny in the back there, and she's surrounded by bottles and little woolly hats. At the end of the advert, we wanted to show the benefit of the Big Knit. So ultimately describe what it is, get people knitting hats, understand the money that goes to charity. And then we chucked in the benefit at the end. The benefit being that old people, the money would go to helping old people. And that may mean that their path may get cleared of snow. It may mean they get help like changing light bulbs or that sort of thing. And we decided that we needed to cram this benefit in because it was part of the story. So we put it in right at the end, and we put the ad into research, and we realized that no one really understood what that last bit was about. We then changed it and just whacked in a pack shot, and the performance of the advert almost doubled. I was so into the ego of getting this story across and trying to tell the story in the way I wanted to, that I forgot that what the most important thing about marketing is that people understand it. They don't understand it. You're not going to be able to influence them. It's not going to matter to them. Clear is always better than clever. And then lastly, on your approach to marketers is I heart strategy. The truth is, I don't always heart strategy. Strategy is long and boring and difficult and takes a lot of thinking. But in reality, strategy is utterly critical to everything you do in marketing, because it has to start from a place of logic. Everything must start from a place of logic. Oh, there we go. That's what happens when you don't have your notes with you. You start speaking the slide ahead of what it is. Yeah, so everything should start with logic, even a little bit. One of the big things that comes to mind when I talk about this is when I worked at Uber, I was the first brand employee there in the UK. And so most people at Uber were like data scientists, ex-management consultants, like they love graphs, they love numbers, they love data. I was making an ad there, and decided with the creative agency that we wanted to put on an Elvis track on this ad. And we decided this was going to really light this advert up if we put on an Elvis track. The Elvis track was about 300 grand for the rights. So I had to go cap in hand to the management and say, I know I've just spent a ton of money on this ad, but like an extra 300 grand, please, to put on an Elvis track. And they said, sure, we can do that. What's the logic? What's the strategy? And it's quite hard to think of the strategy behind why Elvis will improve an advert. So what I had to do is go away and really think about it, work with the creative agency, work with a number of other agencies to find a data point in all of this, and work out what we actually thought from a data point of view this Elvis track would deliver for the advert. And ultimately, that really showed, all the data we found in terms of the benefit it would bring in terms of like memorability, for example, etc., actually did come through, and it came through in the research. And so, coming from a place where I just thought an Elvis track would be a good idea, we were able to actually really justify that through the strategy. Everything you do in marketing is about prioritization. That is literally our jobs. We're just prioritizers. There's budget. We've got to work out where we're going to spend that budget. We've got to work out what the priority is. You've got a product. There are a billion things you could say about that product, on the packaging, its advertising, whatever. All you're ever doing is whittling it down and working out what is the priority. And I think, this is a good way of plotting priority. You plot ultimately the value of something versus the effort of something. If it's high value, then it's high priority. If it's less high value, then it's not. And this is really important to remember as marketeers, that really what you're doing is making constant decisions focused around priority. Now, how a good way of making that decision-making framework is strategy. This is business strategy. Business strategy where you ultimately identify a problem and then work backwards from that. So you've identified a problem, and then you have the vision of your company, which is probably 50 years plus, what the world will like, look like when you get there. You've then got the mission, which is the next stage to achieve that vision. Your 1 to 3 year strategy, maybe some strategic pillars, maybe a team goal, and then maybe your individual OKRs or KPIs or whatever they are, and then ultimately your weekly priorities. What this is doing is helping the business prioritize what's most important to get to that vision, to solve that problem. So what I'm saying here is strategy is really important at a business level to work, to give you a framework on how to prioritize, but it's also critical on an individual level. What you can see from this framework here is the person doing their weekly priorities, whether they're the CEO or whether they're someone super junior, or whether they're the anyone working in the business or connected to that business, they can understand how their weekly priorities ultimately help solve that problem. This is a decision-making framework, really, strategy, and helps you prioritize. So under my leadership, what I try and get my teams to do, and not just my team leads, but literally everyone within the teams, on a quarterly or maybe 6-monthly basis, to write a strategy. Just one page. What's the situation? What is the SWOT, or ultimately, what is the current context we're operating in? What's the complication of that? What's the challenge? What's the difficult bit? So off the back of that, what are our objectives, the approach of how we're going to achieve them, the timeline, and then if you need any money or resource to achieve it. This type of strategy is so critically important. This is Vinted. If you type in Vinted advert, this is what you see. I think you've got a great look of quality and consistency here. I think you really understand that most of this work is from Vinted. It definitely brings across quite a collective, quite an organized appearance as a brand. Innocent, similar color schemes, lots of consistent branding, lots of consistent work. Just typing in Innocent Drinks advert, and you get quite a good range and idea of where Innocent has come. Bit more problematic here. This is Uber. Now, working at Uber, we didn't work to a strategy, certainly not a brand strategy. The business strategy was quite mixed. And so that really filtered through down all the work in all the markets around the world. Vinted, super, super clear. Innocent, super, super clear. But Uber, much, much less clear. And it comes through in the work. If you don't have the strategy, it breaks down everything. Now, I know this is just a creative example, but exactly the same answer, example would come through in PR, in corporate communications, in all of the different facets or levers of marketing that we have. If it's not taken from a strategy, you start to lose your clarity, your quality, your consistency, and ultimately your performance. So everything must come from a place of logic in marketing, is how I approach it and how I would suggest others approach it too. There we are. Approach to marketeer: mattering, being clear enough, not clever enough, and hearting strategy, loving strategy, just even a tiny bit. It's not about chucking loads of work and loads of time into getting everyone deep into strategy. It's just making sure everything's coming from a place of logic. I said at the start, we're going to do how we approach work as marketeers and as ourselves. We've got through the marketing stuff. I hope you're still all with me. And now we're going to talk about how we approach work as ourselves. 3 points I want to talk through here. And I warn you, this gets a lot more cycling-y. The first bit is championing empathy, energy, not time, and now, not then. Let's kick off. So championing empathy. Oh God, there he is. One of the wonderful things about cycling around the world is you realize that people are awesome. I'm so pleased to report back to you that people around the world are amazing. What you see and hear on the news is not true. And when we were leaving North America for the first time, so we started crossing North America in the Northeast, in Portland in Maine. And we left the coast there, and I asked a farmer if we could sleep on his land that evening. And he said, unfortunately, we couldn't. I then asked a woman if we could sleep in her garden. There was a forest at the bottom of the garden. If I said we could put our tent up there. And she said, unfortunately, no, we couldn't. For the following 2 years, no one ever declined a request to stay on the property again for the whole 2 years. Like, people are amazing, and they are there to support you in every way they can. A billion stories of this from cycling around the world. Times I was putting up a tent in a ditch in Canada, because it's Canada's very private land. There's not a lot of public land. Putting my tent up in a ditch, someone came past in their car. 10 minutes later, I'm sat in a hot tub out the back of their house drinking a dry Sancerre. Like, it was incredible how often this happened. This story here, right in front of you, is me holding up my Bangladeshi visa. I was crossing from India into Bangladesh, and I have an Australian passport and a British passport. My Bangladeshi visa was on my Australian passport because it was cheaper. My Indian visa, I was exiting India, was on my British passport because it was also cheaper. So I've got two visas on two different passports. I'm coming into Bangladesh on a land border, and I give my passport over. Now, the Bangladeshi immigration officer has one job, and that is to stamp the into Bangladesh next to the out of India. But he can't, because they're on two separate passports. Chaos ensues. Shouting, we're shouting at them, they're shouting at us. We don't speak their language, they don't speak our language. Not long after that, the whole village, maybe 500 people, surrounding this little hut in the middle of nowhere in Bangladesh. Lots of screaming. No one knows what's going on. No one is listening to one another. Then suddenly, the immigration officer shouts and everyone goes quiet. He grabs a stapler, grabs my two passports, staples them together, and says, "Welcome to Bangladesh." This crazy, crazy moment when no one knew what was going on is something that I've learned comes across in my work life like you couldn't believe. My ability to not listen to other people is huge. And having gone through that experience and many more, to understand that ultimately a company is an organization of human beings. Human beings that all have different backgrounds, different skill sets, different understandings. And so your ability to have empathy and to listen to people and to make sure you are inclusive of everyone's point of views is utterly critical to making that work. What you realize in work and cycling around the world is that generally everyone's trying their best. Everyone's trying their best to get through their life. Everyone's trying their best to make this company work. And we've all got different opinions and different ways of doing it, but everyone generally is trying their best. So knowing that helps you not get frustrated, helps you listen better to people, helps you have more empathy and make sure everyone is heard better. And being the last person to speak in any meeting is generally the best way of doing that. So people are awesome. Everyone's trying their best. And listening is much more important than speaking. Champion empathy. The second thing about how you might approach yourself at work is about energy, not time. This comes across certainly, that's just a picture that I've decided, but comes across, pulls across the idea of time as we look out into the horizon on a long, long road in Uzbekistan. Incidentally, that's a horse's tooth that someone passed. You just see on the handlebars there, the little furry thing. It's a horse's tooth that someone passed me out of the window of a car. And they said, "This is for luck." This was in Kyrgyzstan, literally the day before this photo was taken. They passed us out the window and said, "Here's this horse's tooth. It's for luck." About an hour later, I fell off my bike for the one and only time in 2 years cycling around the world. So do be aware of horse's teeth. They don't bring you the luck that maybe you thought they would. Anyway, back to the topic at hand. And this is about energy, not time. This is something when I was cycling really came through, that time is something you can't control. Energy is something you can. I would cycle myself into oblivion, 14, 16, 18 hour days, just cycling, 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 and then would be miserable. And it took me ages to understand why I was getting so unhappy. And the reason was because I was thinking about how much time I was putting into this task, and never really considering how much energy I was putting into the task. Definitely something I have a problem with at work as well. Late nights, poor work-life balance, ruining myself and putting running on low for such a long time because I'm thinking about how much time I'm putting into work and how good that is for the company, rather than how much energy I'm putting into work and how much better that is. Ultimately, time is a finite resource. We only have so much of it. We cannot control it. What we can control very well is our energy. I'd like to apologize off the bat for this desperate example I'm about to give you, because I'm afraid it's Jeff Bezos. But Jeff Bezos does work his day, his daily calendar, based around energy. He has the most energy in the morning, so he does the most challenging tasks, the strategy, the difficult decisions, the big decisions, whatever. And in the afternoon, maybe after lunch, when things are much more challenging, then he really thinks about what tasks he does after lunch and really works out. He thinks of his day based on the energy he has, not based on meeting to meeting to meeting and what his time is. So that's what I'm trying to get across. Think about what drains you, what stuff takes the most energy. Therefore, when should you be doing it? What creates your flow state? Your flow state is when you're working and you forget what the time is because you're just so involved in the work. What type of work does that, and when's the best time to be doing it? And then, of course, what recharges you? What gets that battery power all the way back up to the top? Don't plot your day, your week, your life around time. Plot it around energy. And lastly, now, not then. And this is a really important thing that has come across to me only in the last year or so of leadership. And I think this is pertinent to everyone, but particularly leaders. So I'm cycling across America and it's getting really difficult through New England, through Vermont. There's just tons and tons of hills to climb. And I've got small chicken legs and weak knees, and I haven't been cycling for very long. I'm not a particularly strong cyclist. I'm in pain. It's pretty miserable. Things aren't going well. During this time, we always talked, cycling with my mate Pete at the time, we always talked about getting to Nevada, the Nevada desert, because it's a Nevada's desert, it's a desert, so it's flat. So we were always saying, look, I know it's difficult now, but we've got to get that, we're getting it, then we'll get through Colorado, over the Great Dividing Range, over these big mountains, and then finally we'll be in the Nevada desert. The wind will be with us and we'll spin across the Nevada desert. The pictures you can see here are the Nevada desert. It turns out the Nevada desert is, yes, a desert, but it's a basin and range geography, which means ultimately it has lots and lots of hills. And so I've been spending 2 months thinking about how wonderful and how easy it's going to be when we get to the Nevada desert, then we'll spin across into California and we'll be at Golden Gate Bridge before you know it and we'll have finished. But the truth is, it was absolutely grueling experience crossing the Nevada desert on this lonely little road, thinking it was going to be flat. And actually it was full and full of mountain passes. And the reason I say that, the reason I give this example, is because that is how I certainly been guilty of operating as a leader and as a report in my business life, because I'm guilty of always thinking ahead and thinking about how great things are going to be. When we hire that person or these two roles, everything will be much better. Like, we'll be able to relax. There'll be everything will be taken control of. When we get to Christmas and the busy period's over, everything will be fine. Like, we can do this, we can do that. Constantly thinking in the future of how great things are going to be in the future. But the truth of life and work is that if the bucket keeps filling up, and if you keep thinking ahead like that and thinking how everything's going to be great in the future, the truth is, but by the time you get there, the bucket will have filled up and there'll be more people to hire. There'll be another challenging period. There'll be another difficult thing that you need to solve. So instead of thinking about the future, you need to think about the now. You need to work out, how can we optimize now? How can we build the right processes? How can we get people in the right roles, create the right structures, whatever it is, to make whatever this future problem we're trying to solve is a problem we can solve today. Otherwise, you get stuck in this wheel spinning of always thinking about the future. And the truth is, you never get that time to relax. You never have that downtime. You need to work out how you can make that happen for you now, not always be thinking around the corner of what you believe will happen in the future. So that's it. We've got through six. I hope you're still with me on this call. We've talked about mattering to people, not marketing to consumers. We've talked about having clarity, which is much more important than being clever. We've talked about loving strategy, even if it's just tiny logic, but making sure there's logic behind everything we do. And then from a more personal self note about our approach to work, champion empathy. Empathy is so critically important to working with people, to making great decisions, and to being part of a great team. On a personal note, thinking about how we look after our energy, not our time. How important it is to think about how we use our energy, because time is not infinite and energy is something we can control. And lastly, thinking about what we do now, not what we do then. It's not about the future. It's about now. And last but not least, I'm chucking in a bonus one because I think it's really important. And I spoke to some marketeers recently who are having a really challenging time, because marketing is a difficult job. Marketing is like an engine room of a company, but ultimately it works with all the different areas of any business, whether it's a startup or whether it's a massive company. Marketing is a massive stakeholder management job, a massive project management job, and it's where a lot of risk comes from. And so I do think of marketeers as people who have to be hugely resilient and have to stick with it through the ups and the downs and the challenges that comes from a company, because marketing really is one of those sort of coalface roles in any business. And that's why I'm going to make this final point here, and that's around growth and resilience. And in order to make this point, I've got some great news for you on this Tuesday morning. And that news is that I am going to tell you the meaning of life. You're very welcome. You and the rest of humanity have been mulling over this topic for many, many years. But I'm so pleased to tell you that here on this call with the Marketing Meetup this morning, you're about to learn what the meaning of life is. You're very welcome. And the meaning of life is this. This is the biosphere in Arizona. It is it's a bit like the Eden Project in Cornwall, where it is ultimately a massive glass greenhouse where they carry out experiments on the natural world. So on flora and fauna, et cetera. So they will control the climate within that greenhouse. You get the idea. So within these greenhouses, whether it is the Eden Project or whether it is the biosphere in Arizona, what they find quite interestingly is that trees, specifically trees, do not reach their expected lifespan. So a tree will normally perish, fall over and die earlier than it would out in the normal natural world. Even in this lovely protected greenhouse that they've made for it, it ultimately won't last as long as it's meant to. The reason? The reason is there's no weather. There's no beautiful British rain, beautiful British hail, storms, lightning. There's nothing difficult for it to experience. And because there's no weather, it means its bark doesn't get stressed. And if its bark doesn't get stressed, it doesn't grow stronger. And so ultimately, it doesn't live to a full life. So what I think is that this is nature telling us humans that this is the meaning of life. That the meaning of life is not to make loads of money, be really popular, become famous. The meaning of life is to be resilient and to continually grow. And yes, the outcomes may be fame and money and all those things. But ultimately, the meaning of life, why we exist, is to have our bark weathered and to get stronger and stronger over time. Now, I know this is a sort of a massive thing to be taking in on a Tuesday morning, but I think it's a useful thing to remember that through the different challenges we have as marketeers in businesses, things going really well and things going terribly badly, ultimately ourselves and our careers is just to continually grow and stick with it and be determined and be wise, but ultimately be resilient and stay with it through all the hard times and the easier times. I hope that's a nice message to take away at the end of this little talk. There's been lots of little bits there that I've ultimately cherry-picked from marketing and from my thoughts on resilience and being your best self. I hope it's interesting. I hope you've got some considerations out of there that maybe you can take into your lives, both at work and your personal lives. Thanks so much for listening to me. It's been an absolute pleasure chatting to you. And do give me a shout with any questions.
James, that absolutely incredible. I have smiled and laughed more in that presentation than I have for a long time in the Marketing Meetup webinars. That was absolutely brilliant. I've taken screenshots. I've written things down. That was wonderful. We've got a bunch of open questions. If you want to stop sharing your screen, and then we can people can see your lovely face. I made the thing that I made a note early on was marketing to consumers versus mattering to people. That's the line I'm taking from today. I think that was absolutely wonderful. And finishing on the meaning of life, like those two, just honestly knocked it out of the park. So let's see if we can sort of whiz through some of these questions. First one is from Lucy Judge, and she says, "Have you managed to balance pursuing your adventures, your adventure pursuits and work, and what's the secret?"
It's Lucy, great question, and it's not easy. Ultimately, the balance I've found is by taking every opportunity. For example, at the start of the year, Googling what is the most effective way to take holiday this year. And really, ultimately, that's a crass way of saying planning, like really thinking about what I want to do in the next year, the next 2 years, and working out when I'm going to do them and how I'm going to fit them in. As an example, so the triathlon of the UK, that took 2 weeks. So I simply took 2.5 weeks holiday. And then I spent all my evenings and weekends planning and jumping into that stuff. When it was something bigger, like cycling around the world, I ended up taking a sabbatical from Innocent from that. I spent 6 years saving up money and planning and trying to get to the start line of that project. And so I ended up having to take a sabbatical, which I'd obviously planned for. That sabbatical didn't quite go to plan because Innocent rang me up to ask me if I was ready to come back. And I was in Nepal at the time, which is still quite a long cycle back to the UK. So ultimately had to take a bit extra time, but I ended up going back to Innocent when I returned. So the truth is it's difficult, but for me it's a priority. Like the adventure nature side of my life is a massive priority. It's really what I spend a lot of time thinking about, and it's where my it's really what I want to do. And so I have to make sacrifices in my private life and in other parts of my life. So I prioritize that, and because I prioritize it, it means I plan well for it and make sure I'm able to achieve it. But yeah, it's difficult to fit it in around a normal life for sure.
Yeah, that's great. And Felicity asked a very similar question. You know, she works for a marketing agency but loves trail running, hiking, paddleboarding, swimming, etc. It's the same for me. I love cycling and mountain biking, and for me it's about putting it in the diary. Like I'm going to Italy in September, and I'm like, I wanted to do a big mountain biking trip with the guys that I ride with for my 40th. That was during COVID. I was like, it's never going to happen if we don't just put it in the diary. So That was, we booked the flights and it was like 150 quid to book the flights. And that was it. Like, we now know it's going to happen. So yeah, it was a useful thing.
And I'm a big advocate of that. Just do it. Stop. I've always tried to, I hate when I say to myself, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. My auntie, we used to call it, my auntie's Australian, she calls it gunners, people who are gunners. They're going to do this, they're going to do that. I never, ever want to be a gunner. I want to be someone who doesn't think about what they're going to do. Just do exactly what James said. Put it in the diary next month, next year, whenever, but get it in and make sure you do it, because we can't control time.
I love that. Don't be a gunner. There's another line. I need to write all these things down. An anonymous attendee said, you've worked for some amazing brands. How did these opportunities come about? And what advice would you give someone looking for the next sort of step/brand?
Great question. Thank you. I've worked for some really great brands. I'm hugely privileged to have been able to do that, and don't think understand that. I think getting that job at Innocent was a life changing moment for me. It really, really was, because ultimately that gave me this foundational understanding of marketing. I didn't study marketing. I really had no idea what it is. I'm still struggling, 18, 19 years on. But ultimately, getting that foot in the door at Innocent is what got me to a position where I could then move on to Uber or be attractive to Uber as an employee, and then attractive to Vinted. In terms of practical advice on how you can get there, two big things stand out to me when I was asked the question just then. Two things came to my mind. First thing is hustling for the role. What I mean by that is there is processes to get jobs. There is LinkedIn or whatever applications, etc. I've read through CVs for many, many hours in my life, and it's incredibly boring and it's incredibly ruthless when you're sat there just chucking CVs to one side. As normal as that process is, you've got to find a way around it. You have got to find a way around that process. If you go to the creative department at Innocent, it's covered in self-made packaging, because so many people would create some packaging and write their CV on it and deliver it around to the company, trying to think outside the box. How can I get into Innocent? And so Innocent would display it, and people have actually got their CVs displayed on shelves in Innocent. And that's what I mean. Like, someone I used to work with got a job at Vinted when I was leaving. Someone I used to work with at Uber, and he never applied for that job. He got in touch with me on LinkedIn to ask about the company. And we chatted, had a 30-minute talk just about Vinted, about what it was like. And he, over the course of a year, just kept that contact coming with me and with loads of other people. But he was hustling. He was constantly trying to put his word out there, making sure his name was front of mind for lots of people. And he got a really good job at Vinted. So yes, so that's my big thing. Think outside the box is one of the worst sentences I could probably say. But it really is it. Like, yes, there's a route one process, but what are all the other ways of getting there? How can you hustle to get there? And then the second point, much simpler, is in your career, don't be too focus-minded on the future. Like, keep an eye out for the spark, the opportunities that come by at the side. I had no real ambition to leave Innocent, but this spark, the opportunity for Uber came along, and for Vinted the same. Like, you can get quite focused on what you're doing. But I think, like you said, like, life's about growth and about new experiences. So keep an eye out for the sparkly things that come in the corner of your eye, because there could be lots of little opportunities. And I was lucky that these two opportunities that came by, neither one was I going to choose initially. You know, when I did make that decision, I'm really pleased that I did. So hustle and keep aware of the opportunities.
Yeah, that's great. And I think, you know, certainly thinking about you as an individual as well, like, the experiences that you've had outside of work immediately make you, you know, yes, you've worked for some wonderful brands, but it immediately makes you more interesting that you're, you know, you're into cycling and hiking, and like, you have flavor outside of your CV kind of thing. And I think that's always a good thing to get a conversation going.
It really is. And you went and left university and your CV's, you know, it's a young CV, there's not a lot in it. You sort of, you know, chuck, oh, I've traveled Thailand on there or something, and, you know, try to sort of bulk it out with these things. And I always felt it was a bit sort of meaningless. But I cannot tell you right now, especially because at Vinted, I was working across Europe, working in Lithuania and Berlin and Amsterdam, and hiring people across all of Europe. Interviewing people who have the perspective of travel, of adventure, of just reading tons of books, reading loads of newspapers, just having more perspective, immediately gives them an interview quality that people without that don't have. You feel that they would be calmer in a crisis, that they'd be ultimately better at thinking on their feet, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So don't think about the experiences outside of work as just something to fill up the CV. Like, they, I really mean it. They are really useful and critical things for, yes, chatting about in an interview, but also that experience, that other perspective those things gives you, makes you better at interviewing and better at the job as well.
Yeah, that's great. That's great advice, James. So something, there's a question here from somebody else that was put in quite early that I also thought was quite interesting. You sort of jokingly talked about the ethics of some of the companies that you work for, i.e. Uber. This person says, do you have any advice for marketers considering moving to a company that doesn't match up with their personal values, thinking of your experiences at Uber?
Yeah. Do I have any advice? I mean, it's a really personal choice about whether a company does or doesn't connect with your person, with your values. When I went to Uber, I to some extent drank the Kool-Aid. The first thing you do is they invite you out to San Francisco and they make you drink the Kool-Aid, as in they tell you all about the company, what it's going to achieve. And I absolutely connected with it. Because the story was this. The story was that private car ownership is ancient. Why have we all got cars? It doesn't make any sense that we've all got cars that are just parked in the street. We've built buildings to house our cars. We've got multi-story car parks. Like, when you think about it, it doesn't make any sense at all. The dream was that would be over. There would be cars moving around constantly that you wouldn't own, like Ubers or self-driving cars or whatever, and you'd get in and out of them. But the need for car ownership was over. So your parking spaces, you know, a multi-story, this is how they described it, a multi-story car park could become a hospital. The car parks by the side of the road or whatever could be pedestrianized. You could fit more playgrounds, whatever that thing was. You know, this is the sort of beauty of the vision. And I connected with that. And I was like, yeah, this makes sense. The problem with some of these tech companies is the vision is a big vision and it's a long way off, and they're going to trample on a lot of feet and cause a lot of disruption on the way to ultimately getting there. And I realize that now as a more mature person, that the vision was a big one and getting there was going to be a tough journey. And I started to be disillusioned over time. But I haven't answered your question. Like, have I got any advice? Not really. It's your own. If you can find something in there that you connect with, I really connected with that story, especially as a brand person. If you can find something in there that you can connect with, but the truth is, if it really doesn't suit your value set, then maybe you have to question the decision.
Yeah, that's great. And I'm actually jumping ahead a couple of questions here. Lee's asked about, he's picked up on your point about mattering and purpose. And he uses the phrase there, purpose washing. And he's saying purpose is very important to him, but you know, is it essential for a brand to thrive in 2023? You know, is having purpose, you know, essential for them to thrive? Because I think, you know, there's certainly some that are maybe a bit more shallow and self-serving. And you know, what's your opinion on that? Is it got to be true, or is it a marketing thing that, you know, is painted for the outside viewer?
I mean, it's a really good question, that, because it is true, and it also is purpose washing. Like, both those worlds definitely exist. And if it's not logically solving a problem and it's a purpose for purpose's sake, then it's definitely purpose washing. I've worked for companies that I think that could be guilty of purpose washing, but ultimately purpose is really critical. If you think of Patagonia is an obvious example of a company with a good purpose. If you look at their value system, there was a period where they where their value system was encroached by their success. So they were obviously trying to be environmentally friendly, was a massive part of their purpose. they were getting to a size where they were creating so much negativity for the planet that it was actually against their purpose. So they actually had to scale back production. That's a good example of a company who have actually properly had to adjust their methods of doing business in order to stay true to their purpose. Those companies, Vinted has incredibly deep purpose and it really lives it. And there are others that don't, or maybe haven't taken the time to actually access it. So I've worked with companies with both. Do I think purpose washing is a thing? Yes, I definitely do. Do I think every company needs a purpose? No, I don't. As in, I don't think it necessarily needs this deep why. Like there are functional companies that have that ultimately deliver a functional experience and a functional need. And I don't think they necessarily need a higher purpose. They don't need a God talking to them. They just need to do what they're doing. So I definitely connect with the idea of purpose washing, and I think that's a decision you need to make, because and it's a really important decision that you need to make as a marketeer, because everything you do in marketing, in telling stories or whatever, ultimately does come from the purpose, vision, values of the company. So you need to be clear that you don't think the company you're working for is purpose washing, because you're going to be using all of that in all the work that you do.
Yeah, that's brilliant. James, we've hit the 10:30 mark on the nose. There's a bunch more questions. What's the best way for people to follow you? Where are you most active? What sort of platforms?
I mean, I'm not.
Or you're just out on your bike?
I'm quite active as a person. On social media, much less so. My Instagram is at Mr. James Peach. It's mostly puns. But it's at Mr. James Peach. I don't post very regularly, but if you're up for it, jump on there. You'll be able to see me hiking across Costa Rica in early next year, and potentially looking at cycling across sub-Saharan Africa later next year. I haven't told my mum, so please don't tell her. And also jump on LinkedIn, James Peach on LinkedIn. I'm building a speaking career and looking to do loads more of it and really enjoying it. So I've got James Peach keynote speaker. If anyone's up for following that account, I really appreciate it. But thanks so much, James, and everyone for listening. I've really enjoyed this and I hope to be back someday.
Yeah, amazing. I highly recommend, if you're working for a company with some speaking budget, then hire James. Clearly he's an absolute pro at this. So yeah, thank you so much, James. That was absolutely brilliant. I've got a bunch of extra energy from this call this morning. Thank you for all the hundreds of people that have joined as well. That's been brilliant having you there. And one final ask is just to go and thank the sponsors on the links that we send, and maybe share something on social about what you've learned from the talk today. That's been absolutely brilliant, and I'm going to have a spring in my step for the rest of the day. So yeah, thanks ever so much, mate, and we'll see you all next week.
Thanks a lot.